Nightingale a lot of names that greatly annoyed Hermione. Hermione assumed an all-for-the-best expression that made Ron even angrier, and Harry had to endure everyone in the class talking loudly and happily about what they were going to do first once they got into Hogsmeade.
"There's always the feast," said Ron, in an effort to cheer Harry up. "You know, the Halloween feast in the evening."
"Yeah," said Harry gloomily. "Great." The Halloween feast was always good, but it would taste a lot better if he was coming to it after a day in Hogsmeade with everyone else. Nothing anyone said made him feel any better about being left behind. Dean Thomas, who was good with a quill, had offered to forge Uncle Vernon's signature on the form. But as Harry had already told Professor McGonagall he hadn't had it signed, that was no good. Ron half-heartedly suggested the invisibility cloak, but Hermione stamped on that one, reminding Ron what Dumbledore had told them about the Dementors being able to see through them. Percy had what were possibly the least helpful words of comfort.
"They make a fuss about Hogsmeade, but I assure you, Harry, it's not all it's cracked up to be," he said seriously. "All right, the sweet shop's rather good, and Zonko's joke shop's frankly dangerous, and yes, the Shrieking Shack's always worth a visit, but really, Harry, apart from that, you're not missing anything."
On Halloween morning, Harry awoke with the rest and went down to breakfast, feeling thoroughly depressed, though doing his best to act normally.
"We'll bring you lots of sweets back from Honeydukes," said Hermione, looking desperately sorry for him.
"Yeah, loads," said Ron.
He and Hermione had finally forgotten their squabble about Crookshanks in the face of Harry's difficulties.
"Don't worry about me," said Harry, in what he hoped was an offhand voice. "I'll see you at the feast. Have a good time."
He accompanied them to the entrance hall, where Filch, the caretaker, was standing inside the front doors, checking off names against a long list, peering suspiciously into every face, and making sure that no one was sneaking out who shouldn't be going.
"Staying here, Potter," shouted Malfoy, who was standing in line with Crabbe and Goyle. "Scared of passing the Dementors?"
Harry ignored him and made his solitary way up the marble staircase, through the deserted corridors, and back to Gryffindor Tower.
"Passport,"
said the fat lady, jerking out of a doze.
"Fortuna Major," said Harry listlessly.
The portrait swung open, and he climbed through the hole into the common room. It was full of chattering first and second years, and a few older students who had obviously visited Hogsmeade so often the novelty had worn off.
"Harry! Harry! Hi, Harry!"
It was Colin Creevy, a second year, who was deeply in awe of Harry and never missed an opportunity to speak to him.
"Aren't you going to Hogsmeade, Harry? Why not, hey?"
Colin looked eagerly around at his friends.
"You can come and sit with us if you like, Harry."
No, thanks, Colin," said Harry, who wasn't in the mood to have a lot of people staring avidly at the scar on his forehead.
I've got to go to the library. Got to get some work done."
After that, he had no choice but to turn right around and head back out of the portrait hole again.
"What was the point waking me up?"
the fat lady called grumpily after him as he walked away. Harry wandered dispiritedly toward the library, but halfway there he changed his mind. He didn't feel like working. He turned around and came face to face with Filch, who had obviously just seen off the last of the Hogsmeade visitors.
"What are you doing?"
Filch snarled suspiciously.
"Nothing," said Harry truthfully.
"Nothing,"
spat Filch, his jowls quivering unpleasantly.
"A likely story, sneaking around on your own. Why aren't you in Hogsmeade buying stink pellets and belch powder and whizzing worms like the rest of your nasty little friends?"
Harry shrugged.
"Well, get back to your common room where you belong,"
snapped Filch, and he stood glaring until Harry had passed out of sight. But Harry didn't go back to the common room. He climbed a staircase, thinking vaguely of visiting the Owlry to see Hedwig, and was walking along another corridor when a voice from inside one of the rooms said,
"Harry?"
Harry doubled back to see who had spoken, and met Professor Lupin, looking around his office door.
"What are you doing?"
said Lupin, though in a very different voice from Filch. "Where are Ron and Hermione?"
"Hogsmeade," said Harry, in a would-be casual voice.
"Ah," said Lupin. He considered Harry for a moment.
"Why don't you come in? I've just taken delivery of a Grindylow for our next lesson."
"A what?"
said Harry. He followed Lupin into his office. In the corner stood a very large tank of water. A sickly green creature with sharp little horns had its face pressed against the glass, pulling faces and flexing its long, spindly fingers.
"Water demon," said Lupin, surveying the Grindylow thoughtfully. "We shouldn't have much difficulty with him, not after the cuppus. The trick is to break his grip. You notice the abnormally long fingers? Strong, but very brittle."
The Grindylow bared its green teeth and then buried itself in a tangle of weeds in a corner.
"Cup of tea," Lupin said, looking around for his kettle. "I was just thinking of making one."
"All right," said Harry awkwardly.
Lupin tapped the kettle with his wand and a blast of steam issued suddenly from the spout.
"Sit down," said Lupin, taking the lid off a dusty tin. "I've only got tea bags, I'm afraid, but I dare say you've had enough of tea leaves."
Harry looked at him. Lupin's eyes were twinkling.
"How did you know about that?" Harry asked. "Professor McGonagall told me," said Lupin, passing Harry a chipped mug of tea. "You're not worried, are you?"
"No," said Harry.
He thought for a moment of telling Lupin about the dog he'd seen in Magnolia Crescent, but decided not to. He didn't want Lupin to think he was a coward, especially since Lupin already seemed to think he couldn't cope with the boggart. Something of Harry's thoughts seemed to have shown on his face, because Lupin said,
"Anything worrying you, Harry?"
"No," Harry lied.
He drank a bit of tea and watched the Grindylow brandishing a fist at him.
"Yes," he said suddenly, putting his tea down on Lupin's desk. "You know that day we fought the boggart?"
"Yes," said Lupin slowly.
"Why didn't you let me fight it?" said Harry abruptly.
Lupin raised his eyebrows.
"I would have thought that was obvious, Harry," he said, sounding surprised.
Harry, who had expected Lupin to deny that he'd done any such thing, was taken aback.
"Why?" he said again.
"Well," said Lupin, frowning slightly, "I assumed that if the boggart faced you, it would assume the shape of Lord Voldemort."
Harry stared. Not only was this the last answer he'd expected, but Lupin had said Voldemort's name. The only person Harry had ever heard say the name aloud, apart from himself, was Professor Dumbledore.
"Clearly I was wrong," said Lupin, still frowning at Harry. "But I didn't think it a good idea for Lord Voldemort to materialize in the staff room. I imagined that people would panic."
"I didn't think of Voldemort," said Harry honestly. I remembered those Dementors."
"I see," said Lupin thoughtfully. Well, I'm impressed."
He smiled slightly at the look of surprise on Harry's face.
"That suggests that what you fear most of all is fear. Very wise, Harry."
Harry didn't know what to say to that, so he drank some more tea.
"So you've been thinking that I didn't believe you capable of fighting the boggart," said Lupin shrewdly.
"Well, yeah," said Harry. He was suddenly feeling a lot happier.
"Professor Lupin, you know the Dementors?"
He was interrupted by a knock on the door.
"Come in," called Lupin.
The door opened, and in came Snape. He was carrying a goblet which was smoking faintly, and stopped at the sight of Harry, his black eyes narrowing.
"Ah, Severus," said Lupin, smiling. "Thanks very much. Could you leave it here on the desk for me?"
Snape set down the smoking goblet, his eyes wandering between Harry and Lupin.
"I was just showing Harry my Grindylow,"
said Lupin pleasantly, pointing at the tank.
"Fascinating," said Snape, without looking at it. "You should drink that directly, Lupin."
Yes, I will," said Lupin.
"I made an entire cauldron full," Snape continued, "if you need more."
"I should probably take some again tomorrow. Thanks very much, Severus."
"Not at all," said Snape,
but there was a look in his eye that Harry didn't like. He backed out of the room, unsmiling and watchful. Harry looked curiously at the goblet. Lupin smiled.
"Professor Snape has very kindly concocted a potion for me," he said. "I have never been much of a potion brewer, and this one is particularly complex."
He picked up the goblet and sniffed it.
"Pity sugar makes it useless," he added, taking a sip and shuddering.
"Why,
Harry began. Lupin looked at him and answered the unfinished question.
"I've been feeling a bit off color," he said. "This potion is the only thing that helps. I'm very lucky to be working alongside Professor Snape. There aren't many wizards who are up to making it."
Professor Lupin took another sip, and Harry had a crazy urge to knock the goblet out of his hands.
"Professor Snape's very interested in the dark arts," he blurted out.
"Really?" said Lupin, looking only mildly interested as he took another gulp of potion.
"Some people reckon..."
Harry hesitated, then plunged recklessly on.
"Some people reckon he'd do anything to get the Defense Against the Dark Arts job."
Lupin drained the goblet and pulled a face.
"Disgusting," he said.
"Well, Harry, I'd better get back to work. I'll see you at the feast later."
"Right,"
said Harry, putting down his empty teacup. The empty goblet was still smoking.
"There you go," said Ron. "We got as much as we could carry."
A shower of brilliantly colored sweets fell into Harry's lap. It was dusk, and Ron and Hermione had just turned up in the common room, pink-faced from the cold wind and looking as though they'd had the time of their lives.
"Thanks," said Harry, picking up a packet of tiny black pepper imps. "What's Hogsmeade like? Where did you go?"
"By the sound of it, everywhere. Dervish and Banjee's, the wizarding equipment shop, Zonko's joke shop, into the Three Broomsticks for foaming mugs of hot butter beer, and many places besides."
"The post office, Harry. About 200 owls, all sitting on shelves, all color-coded, depending on how fast you want your letter to get there. Honeydukes has got a new kind of fudge. They were giving out free samples. There's a bit. Look. We think we saw an ogre. Honestly, they get all sorts at the Three Broomsticks.
Wish we could have brought you some butter beer. Really warms you up."
"What did you do?" said Hermione, looking anxious. "Did you get any work done?"
"No," said Harry. "Lupin made me a cup of tea in his office, and then Snape came in." He told them all about the goblet. Ron's mouth fell open.
"Lupin drank it?"
he gasped.
"Is he mad?"
Hermione checked her watch.
"We better go down. You know the feast will be starting in 5 minutes."
They hurried through the portrait hall and into the crowd, still discussing Snape.
"But if he, you know..."
Hermione dropped her voice, glancing nervously around.
"If he was trying to poison Lupin, he wouldn't have done it in front of Harry."
"Yeah, maybe," said Harry as they reached the entrance hall and crossed into the great hall. It had been decorated with hundreds and hundreds of candle-filled pumpkins, a cloud of fluttering live bats, and many flaming orange streamers, which were swimming lazily across the stormy ceiling like brilliant water snakes. The food was delicious. Even Hermione and Ron, who were full to bursting with honeydew sweets, managed second helpings of everything. Harry kept glancing at the staff table. Professor Lupin looked cheerful and as well as he ever did. He was talking animatedly to tiny little Professor Flitwick, the charms teacher. Harry moved his eyes along the table to the place where Snape sat. Was he imagining it, or were Snape's eyes flickering towards Lupin more often than was natural? The feast finished with an entertainment provided by the Hogwarts ghosts. They popped out of the walls and tables to do a bit of formation gliding. Nearly headless Nick, the Gryffindor ghost, had a great success with a reenactment of his own botched beheading. It had been such a pleasant evening that Harry's good mood couldn't even be spoiled by Malfoy, who shouted through the crowd as they all left the hall,
"The Dementors send their love, Potter!"
Harry, Ron, and Hermione followed the rest of the Gryffindors along the usual path to Gryffindor Tower. But when they reached the corridor that ended with the portrait of the fat lady, they found it jammed with students.
"Why isn't anyone going in?"
said Ron curiously. Harry peered over the heads in front of him. The portrait seemed to be closed.
"Let me through, please," came Percy's voice, and he came bustling importantly through the crowd. "What's the hold-up here? You can't all have forgotten the password. Excuse me, I'm head boy."
And then a silence fell over the crowd. From the front first, so that a chill seemed to spread down the corridor. They heard Percy say in a suddenly sharp voice,
"Somebody get Professor Dumbledore, quick!"
People's heads turned. Those at the back were standing on tiptoe.
"What's going on?"
said Ginny, who had just arrived. A moment later, Professor Dumbledore was there, sweeping toward the portrait. The Gryffindors squeezed together to let him through, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione moved closer to see what the trouble was.
"Oh, my!"
Hermione grabbed Harry's arm. The fat lady had vanished from her portrait, which had been slashed so viciously that strips of canvas littered the floor. Great chunks of it had been torn away completely. Dumbledore took one quick look at the ruined painting and turned, his eyes somber, to see Professors McGonagall, Lupin, and Snape hurrying towards him.
"We need to find her," said Dumbledore. "Professor McGonagall, please go to Mr. Filch at once and tell him to search every painting in the castle for the fat lady."
"You'll be lucky,"
said a cackling voice. It was Peeves, the poltergeist, bobbing over the crowd and looking delighted, as he always did, at the sight of wreckage or worry.
"What do you mean, Peeves?" said Dumbledore calmly,
and Peeves's grin faded a little. He didn't dare taunt Dumbledore. Instead, he adopted an oily voice that was no better than his cackle.
"Ashamed, your headship, sir. Doesn't want to be seen. She's a horrible mess. Saw her running through the landscape up on the fourth floor, sir, dodging between the trees, crying something dreadful,"
he said happily.
"Poor thing," he added unconvincingly.
"Did she say who did it?"
said Dumbledore quietly.
"Oh, yes, Professor Head,"
said Peeves, with the air of one cradling a large bombshell in his arms.
"He got very angry when she wouldn't let him in, you see."
Peeves flipped over and grinned at Dumbledore from between his own legs.
"Nasty temper he's got, that Sirius Black."
Chapter 9, Grim Defeat. Professor Dumbledore sent all the Gryffindors back to the Great Hall, where they were joined 10 minutes later by the students from Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, and Slytherin, who all looked extremely confused.
"The teachers and I need to conduct a thorough search of the castle," Professor Dumbledore told them, as Professors McGonagall and Flitwick closed all doors into the hall. "I'm afraid that, for your own safety, you will have to spend the night here. I want the prefects to stand guard over the entrances to the hall, and I am leaving the head boy and girl in charge. Any disturbance should be reported to me immediately," he added to Percy, who was looking immensely proud and important. "Send word with one of the ghosts."
Professor Dumbledore paused, about to leave the hall, and said,
"Oh, yes, you'll be needing..."
One casual wave of his wand, and the long tables flew to the edges of the hall and stood themselves against the walls. Another wave, and the floor was covered with hundreds of squashy purple sleeping bags.
"Sleep well,"
said Professor Dumbledore, closing the door behind him. The hall immediately began to buzz excitedly. The Gryffindors were telling the rest of the school what had happened.
"Everyone into their sleeping bags," shouted Percy. "Come on, now, no more talking. Lights out in 10 minutes.
"Come on,"
Ron said to Harry and Hermione. They seized 3 sleeping bags and dragged them into a corner.
"Do you think Black's still in the castle?"
Hermione whispered anxiously.
"Dumbledore obviously thinks he might be," said Ron.
"It's very lucky he picked tonight, you know,"
said Hermione, as they climbed fully dressed into their sleeping bags and propped themselves on their elbows to talk.
"The one night we weren't in the tower."
"I reckon he's lost track of time being on the run," said Ron.
"Didn't realize it was Halloween, otherwise he'd have come bursting in here."
Hermione shuddered. All around them, people were asking one another the same question.
How did he get in?
"Maybe he knows how to apparate," said a Ravenclaw a few feet away.
"Just appear out of thin air, you know."
"Disguised himself, probably," said a Hufflepuff fifth year.
"He could have flown in,"
suggested Dean Thomas.
"Honestly, am I the only person who's ever bothered to read Hogwarts a History?"
said Hermione crossly to Harry and Ron.
"Probably," said Ron. "Why?"
"Because the castle's protected by more than walls, you know," said Hermione. "There are all sorts of enchantments on it to stop people entering by stealth. You can't just apparate in here. And I'd like to see the disguise that could fool those Dementors. They're guarding every single entrance to the grounds. They'd have seen him fly in, too, and Filch knows all the secret passages. They'll have them covered."
"The lights are going out now,"
Percy shouted. I want everybody in their sleeping bags and no more talking. The candles all went out at once. The only light now came from the silvery ghosts who were drifting about talking seriously to the prefects, and the enchanted ceiling which, like the sky outside, was scattered with stars. What with that and the whispering that still filled the hall, Harry felt as though he was sleeping outdoors in a light wind. Once every hour, a teacher would reappear in the hall to check that everything was quiet. Around 3 in the morning, when many students had finally fallen asleep, Professor Dumbledore came in. Harry watched him looking around for Percy, who had been prowling between the sleeping bags, telling people off for talking. Percy was only a short way away from Harry, Ron, and Hermione, who quickly pretended to be asleep as Dumbledore's footsteps drew nearer.
"Any sign of him, Professor?" asked Percy in a whisper.
"No. All well here."
Everything's under control, sir.
Good. There's no point moving them all now. I've found a temporary guardian for the Gryffindor portrait hole. You'll be able to move them back in tomorrow.
And the fat lady, sir?
Hiding in a map of Argyleshire on the 2nd floor. Apparently she refused to let Black in without the password, so he attacked. She's still very distressed, but once she's calmed down, I'll have Mr. Filch restore her.
Harry heard the door of the hall creak open again, and more footsteps.
Headmaster!
It was Snape. Harry kept quite still, listening hard.
The whole of the 3rd floor has been searched. He's not there. And Filch has done the dungeons. Nothing there, either.
What about the astronomy tower? Professor Trelawney's room? The owlry?
All searched.
Very well, Severus. I didn't really expect Black to linger.
"Have you any theory as to how he got in, Professor?"
asked Snape. Harry raised his head very slightly off his arms to free his other ear.
"Many, Severus. Each of them as unlikely as the next."
Harry opened his eyes a fraction and squinted up to where they stood. Dumbledore's back was to him, but he could see Percy's face rapt with attention and Snape's profile, which looked angry.
"You remember the conversation we had, Headmaster, just before, the start of term?"
said Snape, who was barely opening his lips, as though trying to block Percy out of the conversation.
"I do, Severus,"
said Dumbledore, and there was something like warning in his voice.
"It seems almost impossible that Black could have entered the school without inside help. I did express my concerns when you appointed—"
"I do not believe a single person inside this castle would have helped Black enter it,"
said Dumbledore, and his tone made it so clear that the subject was closed that Snape didn't reply.
"I must go down to the Dementors," said Dumbledore. "I said I would inform them when our search was complete."
"Didn't they want to help, sir?"
said Percy.
"Oh, yes," said Dumbledore coldly. "But I'm afraid no Dementor will cross the threshold of this castle while I am headmaster."
Percy looked slightly abashed. Dumbledore left the hall, walking quickly and quietly. Snape stood for a moment, watching the headmaster with an expression of deep resentment on his face, and then he too left. Harry glanced sideways at Ron and Hermione. Both of them had their eyes open too, reflecting the starry ceiling.
"What was all that about?"
Ron mouthed. The school talked of nothing but Sirius Black for the next few days. The theories about how he had entered the castle became wilder and wilder. Hannah Abbott from Hufflepuff spent most of their next herbology class telling anyone who'd listen that Black could turn into a flowering shrub. The fat lady's ripped canvas had been taken off the wall and replaced with the portrait of Sir Cadogan and his fat grey pony. Nobody was very happy about this. Sir Cadogan spent half his time challenging people to duels, and the rest thinking up ridiculously complicated passwords, which he changed at least twice a day.
"He's a complete lunatic," said Seamus Finnegan angrily to Percy. "Can't we get anyone else?"
"None of the other pictures wanted the job," said Percy, frightened of what happened to the fat lady. "Sir Cadogan was the only one brave enough to volunteer." Sir Cadogan, however, was the least of Harry's worries. He was now being closely watched. teachers found excuses to walk along corridors with him, and Percy Weasley, acting, Harry suspected, on his mother's orders, was tailing him everywhere like an extremely pompous guard dog. To cap it all, Professor McGonagall summoned Harry into her office with such a somber expression on her face, Harry thought someone must have died.
"There's no point hiding it from you any longer, Potter," she said in a very serious voice. "I know this will come as a shock to you, but Sirius Black..."
"I know he's after me," said Harry wearily. "I heard Ron's dad telling his mum Mr. Weasley works for the Ministry of Magic." Professor McGonagall seemed very taken aback. She stared at Harry for a moment or two and then said,
"I see. Well, in that case, Potter, you'll understand why I don't think it's a good idea for you to be practicing Quidditch in the evenings. Out on the field with only your team members, it's very exposed, Potter."
"We've got our first match on Saturday," said Harry, outraged. "I've got to train, Professor."
Professor McGonagall considered him intently. Harry knew she was deeply interested in the Gryffindor team's prospects. It had been she, after all, who'd suggested him as seeker in the first place. He waited, holding his breath. Professor McGonagall stood up and stared out of the window at the Quidditch field, just visible through the rain.
"Well, goodness knows, I'd like to see us win the cup at last. But all the same, Potter, I'd be happier if a teacher were present. I'll ask Madam Hooch to oversee your training sessions."
The weather worsened steadily as the first Quidditch match drew nearer. Undaunted, the Gryffindor team was training harder than ever under the eye of Madam Hooch. Then, at their final training session before Saturday's match, Oliver Wood gave his team some unwelcome news.
"We're not playing, Slytherin," he told them, looking very angry. "Flint's just been to see me. We're playing Hufflepuff instead."
"Why?"
chorused the rest of the team.
"Flint's excuse is that their seeker's arm's still injured," said Wood, grinding his teeth furiously. "But it's obvious why they're doing it. Don't want to play in this weather. Think it'll damage their chances."
There had been strong winds and heavy rain all day, and as Wood spoke, they heard a distant rumble of thunder.
"There's nothing wrong with Malfoy's arm," said Harry furiously. "He's faking it."
"I know that, but we can't prove it," said Wood bitterly, "and we've been practicing all those moves assuming we're playing Slytherin, and instead it's Hufflepuff, and their style's quite different. They've got a new captain and seeker, Cedric Diggory."
Angelina, Alicia, and Katie suddenly giggled.
"What?"
said Wood, frowning at this light-hearted behaviour.
"He's that tall, good-looking one, isn't he?" said Angelina.
"Strong and silent," said Katie, and they started to giggle again.
"He's only silent because he's too thick to string two words together," said Fred impatiently. "I don't know why you're worried, Oliver. Hufflepuff is a pushover. Last time we played them, Harry caught the snitch in about 5 minutes, remember?"
"We were playing in completely different conditions," Wood shouted, his eyes bulging slightly. "Diggory's put a very strong side together. He's an excellent seeker. I was afraid you'd take it like this. We mustn't relax. We must keep our focus. Slytherin is trying to wrong-foot us. We must win."
"Oliver, calm down," said Fred, looking slightly alarmed. "We're taking Hufflepuff very seriously. Seriously."
The day before the match, the winds reached howling point and the rain fell harder than ever. It was so dark inside the corridors and classrooms that extra torches and lanterns were lit. The Slytherin team was looking very smug indeed, and none more so than Malfoy.
"Ah, if only my arm was feeling a bit better," he sighed as the gale outside pounded the windows.
Harry had no room in his head to worry about anything except the match tomorrow. Oliver Wood kept hurrying up to him between classes and giving him tips. The third time this happened, Wood talked for so long that Harry suddenly realized he was 10 minutes late for defense against the dark arts and set off at a run, with Wood shouting after him,
"Diggory's got a very fast swerve, Harry, so you might want to try looping him."
Harry skidded to a halt outside the defense against the dark arts classroom, pulled the door open, and dashed inside.
"Sorry I'm late, Professor Lupin.
But it wasn't Professor Lupin who looked up at him from the teacher's desk. It was Snape.
"This lesson began 10 minutes ago, Potter, so I think we'll make it 10 points from Gryffindor. Sit down."
but Harry didn't move.
"Where's Professor Lupin?" he said.
"He says he is feeling too ill to teach today," said Snape with a twisted smile. "I believe I told you to sit down."
But Harry stayed where he was. "What's wrong with him?" Snape's black eyes glittered.
"Nothing life-threatening," he said, looking as though he wished it were. 5 more points from Gryffindor, and if I have to ask you to sit down again, it will be 50.
Harry walked slowly to his seat and sat down. Snape looked around at the class.
"As I was saying before Potter interrupted, Professor Lupin has not left any record of the topics you have covered so far."
"Please, sir, we've done Boggarts, Redcaps, Kappas, and Grindylows," said Hermione quickly, "and we're just about to start..."
"Be quiet," said Snape coldly. "I did not ask for information. I was merely commenting on Professor Lupin's lack of organization."
"He's the best defense against the dark arts teacher we've ever had," said Dean Thomas boldly, and there was a murmur of agreement from the rest of the class. Snape looked more menacing than ever.
"You are easily satisfied. Lupin is hardly overtaxing you. I would expect first years to be able to deal with Redcaps and Grindylows. Today we shall discuss..."
Harry watched him flick through the textbook to the very back chapter, which he must know they hadn't covered.
"Werewolves," said Snape.
"But, sir," said Hermione, seemingly unable to restrain herself, "we're not supposed to do werewolves yet. We're due to start hinky-punks."
"Miss Granger," said Snape in a voice of deadly calm, "I was under the impression that I am teaching this lesson, not you, and I am telling you all to turn to page 394.
He glanced around again.
"All of you, now."
With many bitter sidelong looks and some sullen muttering, the class opened their books.
"Which of you can tell me how we distinguish between the werewolf and the true wolf?" said Snape.
Everyone sat in motionless silence. Everyone except Hermione, whose hand, as it so often did, had shot straight into the air.
"Anyone?"
Snape said, ignoring Hermione. His twisted smile was back.
"Are you telling me that Professor Lupin hasn't even taught you the basic distinction between..."
"We told you," said Parvati suddenly. "We haven't got as far as werewolves yet. We're still on..."
"Silence!" snarled Snape. "Well, well, well, I never thought I'd meet a third-year class who wouldn't even recognize a werewolf when they saw one. I shall make a point of informing Professor Dumbledore how very behind you all are."
"Please, sir," said Hermione, whose hand was still in the air, "the werewolf differs from the true wolf in several small ways. The snout of the werewolf..."
"That is the second time you have spoken out of turn, Miss Granger," said Snape coolly. 5 more points from Gryffindor for being an insufferable know-it-all."
Hermione went very red, put down her hand, and stared at the floor with her eyes full of tears. It was a mark of how much the class loathed Snape that they were all glaring at him, because every one of them had called Hermione a know-it-all at least once, and Ron, who told Hermione she was a know-it-all at least twice a week, said loudly,
"You ask us a question, and she knows the answer. Why ask if you don't want to be told?"
The class knew instantly he'd gone too far. Snape advanced on Ron slowly, and the room held its breath.
"Detention, Weasley,"
Snape said silkily, his face very close to Ron's.
"And if I ever hear you criticize the way I teach a class again, you will be very sorry indeed."
No one made a sound throughout the rest of the lesson. They sat and made notes on werewolves from the textbook, while Snape prowled up and down the rows of desks, examining the work they had been doing with Professor Lupin.
"Very poorly explained. That is incorrect. The kappa is more commonly found in Mongolia. Professor Lupin gave this 8 out of 10. I wouldn't have given it 3.
When the bell rang at last, Snape held them back.
"You will each write an essay to be handed in to me on the ways you recognize and kill werewolves. I want 2 rolls of parchment on the subject, and I want them by Monday morning. It is time somebody took this class in hand. Weasley, stay behind. We need to arrange your detention."
Harry and Hermione left the room with the rest of the class, who waited until they were well out of earshot, then burst into a furious tirade about Snape. "Snape's never been like this with any of our other Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers, even if he did want the job," Harry said to Hermione. "Why's he got it in for Lupin? Do you think this is all because of the Boggart?"
"I don't know," said Hermione pensively, "but I really hope Professor Lupin gets better soon."
Ron caught up with them 5 minutes later in a towering rage.
"Do you know what that," he called Snape something that made Hermione say, "Ron, is making me do? I've got to scrub out the bedpans in the hospital wing without magic."
He was breathing deeply, his fists clenched.
"Why couldn't Black have hidden in Snape's office, eh? He could have finished him off for us."
Harry woke extremely early the next morning, so early that it was still dark. For a moment he thought the roaring of the wind had woken him. Then he felt a cold breeze on the back of his neck and sat bolt upright. Peeves, the poltergeist, had been floating next to him, blowing hard in his ear.
"What did you do that for?"
said Harry furiously. Peeves puffed out his cheeks, blew hard, and zoomed backward out of the room, cackling. Harry fumbled for his alarm clock and looked at it. It was 4:30. Cursing Peeves, he rolled over and tried to get back to sleep, but it was very difficult, now that he was awake, to ignore the sounds of the thunder rumbling overhead, the pounding of the wind against the castle walls, and the distant creaking of the trees in the Forbidden Forest. In a few hours he would be out on the Quidditch field, battling through that gale. Finally, he gave up any thought of more sleep, got up, dressed, picked up his Nimbus 2000, and walked quietly out of the dormitory. As Harry opened the door, something brushed against his leg. He bent down just in time to grab Crookshanks by the end of his bushy tail and drag him outside. "You know, I reckon Ron was right about you," Harry told Crookshanks suspiciously. "There are plenty of mice around this place. Go and chase them. Go on," he added, nudging Crookshanks down the spiral staircase with his foot. "Leave Scabbers alone." The noise of the storm was even louder in the common room. Harry knew better than to think the match would be cancelled. Quidditch matches weren't called off for trifles like thunderstorms. Nevertheless, he was starting to feel very apprehensive. Wood had pointed out Cedric Diggory to him in the corridor. Diggory was a 5th year and a lot bigger than Harry. Seekers were usually light and speedy, but Diggory's weight would be an advantage in this weather because he was less likely to be blown off course. Harry whiled away the hours until dawn in front of the fire, getting up every now and then to stop Crookshanks from sneaking up the boys' staircase again. At long last, Harry thought it must be time for breakfast, so he headed through the portrait hole alone.
"Stand and fight, you mangy cur!"
yelled Sir Cadogan. "Oh, shut up," Harry yawned. He revived a bit over a large bowl of porridge, and by the time he'd started on toast, the rest of the team had turned up.
"It's going to be a tough one,"
said Wood, who wasn't eating anything.
"Oh, stop worrying, Oliver," said Alicia soothingly. "We don't mind a bit of rain."
But it was considerably more than a bit of rain. Such was the popularity of Quidditch that the whole school turned out to watch the match as usual, but they ran down the lawn toward the Quidditch field, heads bowed against the ferocious wind, umbrellas being whipped out of their hands as they went. Just before he entered the locker room, Harry saw Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle laughing and pointing at him from under an enormous umbrella on their way to the stadium. The team changed into their scarlet robes and waited for Wood's usual pre-match pep talk, but it didn't come. He tried to speak several times, made an odd gulping noise, then shook his head hopelessly and beckoned them to follow him. The wind was so strong that they staggered sideways as they walked out onto the field. If the crowd was cheering, they couldn't hear it over the fresh rolls of thunder. Rain was splattering over Harry's glasses. How on earth was he going to see the snitch in this? The Hufflepuffs were approaching from the opposite side of the field, wearing canary yellow robes.
The captains walked up to each other and shook hands. Diggory smiled at Wood, but Wood now looked as though he had lockjaw and merely nodded. Harry saw Madam Hooch's mouth form the words, "Mount your brooms." He pulled his right foot out of the mud with a squelch and swung it over his Nimbus 2000. Madam Hooch put her whistle to her lips and gave it a blast that sounded shrill and distant. They were off. Harry rose fast, but his Nimbus was swerving slightly with the wind. He held it as steady as he could and turned, squinting into the rain. Within 5 minutes, Harry was soaked to his skin and frozen, hardly able to see his teammates, let alone the tiny Snitch. He flew backward and forward across the field, past blurred red and yellow shapes, with no idea of what was happening in the rest of the game. He couldn't hear the commentary over the wind. The crowd was hidden beneath a sea of cloaks and battered umbrellas. Twice Harry came very close to being unseated by a bludger. His vision was so clouded by the rain on his glasses, he hadn't seen them coming. He lost track of time. It was getting harder and harder to hold his broom straight. The sky was getting darker as though night had decided to come early. Twice Harry nearly hit another player, without knowing whether it was a teammate or opponent. Everyone was now so wet and the rain so thick he could hardly tell them apart. With the first flash of lightning came the sound of Madam Hooch's whistle. Harry could just see the outline of Wood through the thick rain, gesturing him to the ground. The whole team splashed down into the mud. "I call for time out," Wood roared at his team. "Come on, under here." They huddled at the edge of the field under a large umbrella. Harry took off his glasses and wiped them hurriedly on his robes. "What's the score?" "We're 50 points up," said Wood. "But unless we get the Snitch soon, we'll be playing into the night." "I've got no chance with these on," Harry said exasperatedly, waving his glasses. At that very moment, Hermione appeared at his shoulder. She was holding her cloak over her head and was inexplicably beaming.
"I've had an idea, Harry. Give me your glasses, quick!"
He handed them to her, and as the team watched in amazement, Hermione tapped them with her wand and said,
"Impervious!"
"There,"
she said, handing them back to Harry.
"They'll repel water."
Wood looked as though he could have kissed her.
"Brilliant,"
he called hoarsely after her as she disappeared into the crowd.
"Okay, team, let's go for it."
Hermione's spell had done the trick. Harry was still numb with cold, still wetter than he'd ever been in his life, but he could see. Full of fresh determination, he urged his broom through the turbulent air, staring in every direction for the Snitch, avoiding a bludger, ducking beneath Diggory, who was streaking in the opposite direction. There was another clap of thunder, followed immediately by forked lightning. This was getting more and more dangerous. Harry needed to get the Snitch quickly. He turned, intending to head back toward the middle of the field, but at that moment another flash of lightning illuminated the stands, and Harry saw something that distracted him completely. The silhouette of an enormous, shaggy black dog, clearly imprinted against the sky, motionless in the topmost, empty row of seats. Harry's numb hands slipped on the broom handle, and his Nimbus dropped a few feet. Shaking his sodden bangs out of his eyes, he squinted back into the stands. The dog had vanished.
"Harry!" came Wood's anguished yell from the Gryffindor goalpost. "Harry! Behind you!"
Harry looked wildly around. Cedric Diggory was pelting up the field, and a tiny speck of gold was shimmering in the rain-filled air between them. With a jolt of panic, Harry threw himself flat to the broom handle and zoomed towards the Snitch.
"Come on!"
he growled at his Nimbus as the rain whipped his face.
"Faster!"
But something odd was happening. An eerie silence was falling across the stadium. The wind, though as strong as ever, was forgetting to roar. It was as though someone had turned off the sound, as though Harry had gone suddenly deaf. What was going on? And then a horribly familiar wave of cold swept over him, inside him, just as he became aware of something moving on the field below. Before he'd had time to think, Harry had taken his eyes off the Snitch and looked down. At least 100 Dementors, their hidden faces pointing up at him, were standing beneath him.
It was as though freezing water were rising in his chest, cutting at his insides, and then he heard it again. Someone was screaming, screaming inside his head, a woman.
"Not Harry! Not Harry! Please, not Harry!"
"Stand aside, you silly girl, stand aside now!
Not Harry, please, no! Take me, kill me instead!"
Numbing, swirling white mist was filling Harry's brain. What was he doing? Why was he flying? He needed to help her. She was going to die. She was going to be murdered. He was falling, falling through the icy mist.
"Not Harry! Please! Have mercy! Have mercy!"
A shrill voice was laughing. The woman was screaming. And Harry knew no more.
Lucky the ground was so soft. I thought he was dead for sure.
But he didn't even break his glasses.
Harry could hear the voices whispering, but they made no sense whatsoever. He didn't have a clue where he was, or how he'd got there, or what he'd been doing before he got there. All he knew was that every inch of him was aching as though it had been beaten.
"That was the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life."
Scariest, the scariest thing. Hooded black figures, cold, screaming. Harry's eyes snapped open. He was lying in the hospital wing. The Gryffindor Quidditch team, spattered with mud from head to foot, was gathered around his bed. Ron and Hermione were also there, looking as though they'd just climbed out of a swimming pool.
"Harry," said Fred, who looked extremely white underneath the mud, "how are you feeling?"
It was as though Harry's memory was on fast forward. The lightning, the grim, the snitch, and the dementors.
"What happened?"
he said, sitting up so suddenly they all gasped.
"You fell off," said Fred. "Must have been, what, 50 feet? "We thought you died," said Alicia, who was shaking.
Hermione made a small, squeaky noise. Her eyes were extremely bloodshot.
"But the match," said Harry. "What happened? Are we doing a replay?"
No one said anything. The horrible truth sank into Harry like a stone.
"We didn't lose."
"Diggory got the snitch," said George, "just after you fell. He didn't realize what had happened. When he looked back and saw you on the ground, he tried to call it off, wanted a rematch. But they won fair and square. Even Wood admits it."
"Where is Wood?"
said Harry, suddenly realizing he wasn't there.
"Still in the showers," said Fred. "We think he's trying to drown himself."
Harry put his face on his knees, his hands gripping his hair. Fred grabbed his shoulder and shook it roughly.
"Come on, Harry. You've never missed the snitch before."
"There had to be one time you didn't get it," said George. "It's not over yet," said Fred. "We lost by 100 points, right? So if Hufflepuff loses to Ravenclaw and we beat Ravenclaw and Slytherin, Hufflepuff will have to lose by at least 200 points, said George. "But if they beat Ravenclaw..." "No way. Ravenclaw is too good. But if Slytherin loses against Hufflepuff..." "It all depends on the points. A margin of 100, either way..."
Harry lay there, not saying a word. They had lost. For the first time ever, he had lost a Quidditch match. After 10 minutes or so, Madame Pomfrey came over to tell the team to leave him in peace.
"We'll come and see you later," Fred told him. "Don't beat yourself up, Harry. You're still the best seeker we've ever had."
The team trooped out, trailing mud behind them. Madame Pomfrey shut the door behind them, looking disapproving. Ron and Hermione moved nearer to Harry's bed.
"Dumbledore was really angry," Hermione said in a quaking voice. "I've never seen him like that before. He ran onto the field as you fell, waved his wand, and you sort of slowed down before you hit the ground. And then he whirled his wand at the Dementors, shot silver stuff at them. They left the stadium right away. He was furious they'd come onto the grounds. We heard him..."
"Then he magicked you onto a stretcher," said Ron, "and walked up to school with you floating on it. Everyone thought you were..."
His voice faded, but Harry hardly noticed. He was thinking about what the Dementors had done to him, about the screaming voice. He looked up and saw Ron and Hermione looking at him so anxiously that he quickly cast around for something matter-of-fact to say.
"Did someone get my Nimbus?"
Ron and Hermione looked quickly at each other.
What?
Said Harry, looking from one to the other.
"Well, when you fell off, It got blown away, said Hermione hesitantly. And?
And it hit,
oh, Harry, it hit the Whomping Willow.
Harry's insides lurched. The Whomping Willow was a very violent tree that stood alone in the middle of the grounds.
And? He said, dreading the answer.
Well, you know the Whomping Willow, said Ron. It doesn't like being hit.
Professor Flitwick brought it back just before you came around, said Hermione in a very small voice.
Slowly she reached down for a bag at her feet, turned it upside down, and tipped a dozen bits of splintered wood and twig onto the bed, the only remains of Harry's faithful, finely beaten broomstick. Chapter 10 The Marauder's Map. Madame Pomfrey insisted on keeping Harry in the hospital wing for the rest of the weekend. He didn't argue or complain, but he wouldn't let her throw away the shattered remnants of his Nimbus 2000. He knew he was being stupid, knew that the Nimbus was beyond repair, but Harry couldn't help it. He felt as though he'd lost one of his best friends. He had a stream of visitors, all intent on cheering him up. Hagrid sent him a bunch of earwiggy flowers that looked like yellow cabbages, and Ginny Weasley, blushing furiously, turned up with a get-well card she had made herself, which sang shrilly unless Harry kept it shut under his bowl of fruit. The Gryffindor team visited again on Sunday morning, this time accompanied by Wood, who told Harry, in a hollow, dead sort of voice, that he didn't blame him in the slightest. Ron and Hermione left Harry's bedside only at night, but nothing anyone said or did could make Harry feel any better, because they knew only half of what was troubling him. He hadn't told anyone about the Grim, not even Ron and Hermione, because he knew Ron would panic and Hermione would scoff. The fact remained, however, that it had now appeared twice, and both appearances had been followed by near-fatal accidents. The first time, he had nearly been run over by the night bus, the second fallen 50 feet from his broomstick. Was the Grim going to haunt him until he actually died? Was he going to spend the rest of his life looking over his shoulder for the beast? And then there were the Dementors. Harry felt sick and humiliated every time he thought of them. Everyone said the Dementors were horrible, but no one else collapsed every time they went near one. No one else heard echoes in their head of their dying parents. Because Harry knew who that screaming voice belonged to now. He had heard her words, heard them over and over again during the night hours in the hospital wing while he lay awake, staring at the strips of moonlight on the ceiling. When the Dementors approached him, he heard the last moments of his mother's life, her attempts to protect him, Harry, from Lord Voldemort, and Voldemort's laughter before he murdered her. Harry dozed fitfully, sinking into dreams full of clammy, rotted hands and petrified pleading, jerking awake to dwell again on his mother's voice. It was a relief to return to the noise and bustle of the main school on Monday, where he was forced to think about other things, even if he had to endure Draco Malfoy's taunting. Malfoy was almost beside himself with glee at Gryffindor's defeat. He had finally taken off his bandages and celebrated having the full use of both arms again by doing spirited imitations of Harry falling off his broom. Malfoy spent much of their next potions class doing Dementor imitations across the dungeon. Ron finally cracked and flung a large, slippery crocodile heart at Malfoy, which hit him in the face and caused Snape to take 50 points from Gryffindor.
"If Snape's teaching defense against the dark arts again, I'm skiving off," said Ron, as they headed towards Lupin's classroom after lunch. "Check who's in there, Hermione."
Hermione peered around the classroom door.
"It's okay."
Professor Lupin was back at work. It certainly looked as though he had been ill. His old robes were hanging more loosely on him, and there were dark shadows beneath his eyes. Nevertheless, he smiled at the class as they took their seats, and they burst at once into an explosion of complaints about Snape's behavior while Lupin had been ill.
"It's not fair. He was only filling in. Why should he give us homework? We don't know anything about werewolves. 2 rolls of parchment?"
"Did you tell Professor Snape we haven't covered them yet?" Lupin asked, frowning slightly.
The babble broke out again. Yes, but he said we were really behind. He wouldn't listen. Two rolls of parchment.
Professor Lupin smiled at the look of indignation on every face. Don't worry. I'll speak to Professor Snape. You don't have to do the essay.
Oh, no, said Hermione, looking very disappointed. I've already finished it.
They had a very enjoyable lesson. Professor Lupin had brought along a glass box containing a hinky-punk, a little one-legged creature who looked as though he were made of wisps of smoke, rather frail and harmless-looking.
Lures travellers into bogs, said Professor Lupin as they took notes. You notice the lantern dangling from his hand? Hops ahead. People follow the light, then?
The hinky-punk made a horrible squelching noise against the glass. When the bell rang, everyone gathered up their things and headed for the door, Harry among them. But,
wait a moment, Harry, Lupin called. I'd like a word.
Harry doubled back and watched Professor Lupin covering the hinky-punk's box with a cloth.
I heard about the match, said Lupin, turning back to his desk and starting to pile books into his briefcase. And I'm sorry about your broomstick. Is there any chance of fixing it?
No, said Harry. The tree smashed it to bits. Lupin sighed.
They planted the Whomping Willow the same year that I arrived at Hogwarts. People used to play a game, trying to get near enough to touch the trunk. In the end, a boy called Davy Gudgeon nearly lost an eye, and we were forbidden to go near it. No broomstick would have a chance.
Did you hear about the Dementors, too? Said Harry with difficulty.
Lupin looked at him quickly. Yes, I did. I don't think any of us have seen Professor Dumbledore that angry. They have been growing restless for some time, furious at his refusal to let them inside the grounds. I suppose they were the reason you fell.
Yes, said Harry.
He hesitated, and then the question he had to ask burst from him before he could stop himself. Why? Why do they affect me like that? Am I just...
It has nothing to do with weakness, said Professor Lupin sharply, as though he had read Harry's mind.
The Dementors affect you worse than the others because there are horrors in your past that the others don't have.
A ray of wintry sunlight fell across the classroom, illuminating Lupin's grey hairs and the lines on his young face.
Dementors are among the foulest creatures that walk this earth. They infest the darkest, filthiest places. They glory in decay and despair. They drain peace, hope, and happiness out of the air around them. Even muggles feel their presence, though they can't see them. Get too near a Dementor, and every good feeling, every happy memory, will be sucked out of you. If it can, the Dementor will feed on you long enough to reduce you to something like itself, soulless and evil. You'll be left with nothing but the worst experiences of your life. And the worst that happened to you, Harry, is enough to make anyone fall off their broom. You have nothing to feel ashamed of.
When they get near me, Harry stared at Lupin's desk, his throat tight, I can hear Voldemort murdering my mum.
Lupin made a sudden motion with his arm as though to grip Harry's shoulder, but thought better of it. There was a moment's silence, then...
Why did they have to come to the match? Said Harry bitterly.
They're getting hungry, said Lupin coolly, shutting his briefcase with a snap. Dumbledore won't let them into the school, so their supply of human prey has dried up. I don't think they could resist the large crowd around the Quidditch field. All that excitement, emotions running high, it was their idea of a feast.
Azkaban must be terrible, Harry muttered.
Lupin nodded grimly.
The fortress is set on a tiny island way out to sea, but they don't need walls and water to keep the prisoners in. Not when they're all trapped inside their own heads, incapable of a single cheerful thought. Most of them go mad within weeks.
But Sirius Black escaped from them, Harry said slowly. He got away.
Lupin's briefcase slipped from the desk. He had to stoop quickly to catch it.
Yes, he said, straightening up. Black must have found a way to fight them. I wouldn't have believed it possible. Dementors are supposed to drain a wizard of his powers if he's left with them too long. "You made that Dementor on the train back off," said Harry suddenly. "There are certain defenses one can use," said Lupin, "but there was only one Dementor on the train. The more there are, the more difficult it becomes to resist."
"What defenses?" said Harry at once. "Can you teach me?"
"I don't pretend to be an expert at fighting Dementors, Harry. Quite the contrary.
But if the Dementors come to another Quidditch match, I need to be able to fight them."
Lupin looked into Harry's determined face, hesitated, then said, "Well, all right, I'll try and help. But it'll have to wait until next term, I'm afraid. I have a lot to do before the holidays.